And now, it's time for our weekly news round, Lutheran Radio News, with Paul Hill.
The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod reports that with the unanimous concurrence of the LCMS Board for International Mission, the BIM, Synod President the Reverend Dr. Matthew Harrison has named the Reverend Daniel F. McMiller as the new Executive Director of the Office of International Mission, the OIM. McMiller, currently the OIM's Associate Executive Director, will succeed the Reverend John Fail, head of the OIM since 2015. Fail had announced that he would be leaving the position in August. In his new role, McMiller will oversee the St. Louis-based staff and operations of the OIM, as well as the work of the Church's missionaries and other mission personnel in the OIM's four global regions of Africa, Eurasia, Asia, and Latin America and the Caribbean. "I am humbled by the honor to succeed Pastor Fail," McMiller said, "and look forward to working with the entire leadership team of the OIM, our missionaries, and all the wonderful departments of the LCMS. There is much to be learned as we walk together in meeting the opportunities to evangelize, catechize, develop faithful pastors, plant churches, extend mercy, and simply tell the world about the good news of Jesus Christ." BIM Chairman the Reverend Bernard Seter had glowing words for both the outgoing Fail and the incoming McMiller. "Reverend Fail," he said, "is a churchman, a reconciler, and a wonderful administrator with a love for mission and mercy that is surpassed only by his love for the gospel of Christ. He singularly focuses on the question, how can we advance the mission? He will be missed." As for McMiller, Seter said, "Dan's knowledge of the church's work mission is wide and deep. He knows our partner churches, our staff, and intimately knows the needs of our missionaries because he was one himself for many years. His love for the mission work of the church is palpable and contagious, and his faith in the Lord of the church is manifest in word and deed. He will be a great resource and leader." President Harrison seconded Seter's remarks. "We are very thankful for John Fail's service," he said, "and Dan McMiller's extensive experience as a missionary and working with all current mission staff will be a tremendous blessing." Synod Chief Mission Office of Reverend Kevin Robson, who oversees the OIM, as well as the Office of National Mission, Pastoral Education, Communications and Mission Advancement, offered this. "In the Reverend McMiller, God has blessed us with another superbly gifted servant to follow the Reverend Fail. John made lasting, magnificent contributions to the international mission and ministry of the LCMS during a period when the OIM experienced a near doubling of our deployed career missionaries. He will be sorely missed for his pastoral, Christ-centered approach to all aspects of our life together in the OIM. Dan is no less insistent on Christ at the center, and over these past years has established a reputation for consistent excellence in leadership and service to OIM staff and their ongoing work 24/7 around the globe." Calling this an exciting time in the life of the Synod, McMiller pointed to large overseas church bodies interested in theological dialogue with the LCMS and small emerging church bodies eager for pastors, teachers, theological educators, medical missions teams, and deaconesses. He said the OIM, together with the Synod's Church Relations Office and the Office of the President, wants to strengthen ties to all faithful Lutherans to the end that their own confession is made more clear and unified against many challenges. But meantime, facing stiff financial constraints owing to far more numerous available mission opportunities to be credibly addressed with anticipated revenues, a pattern that's been in play with occasional exceptions for decades, the Synod's operations team, working in concert with the Office of the President and unit executives, held intensive discussions. The bulk of the $7.9 million decrease in budgeted operating expenses, $6.7 million, derives from the Office of the International Mission, OIM, but it is important to note that the reduction will have little material effect on the day-to-day operations of missionaries, mission leaders, and support staff. This is because the lion's share of the OIM's cuts, $6.5 million, comes from initiatives that mission personnel would like to pursue, but only if and when funds were already in hand. With no guarantee that contributions for some or all of these optional projects will be realized, the operations team, striving to be conservative in its revenue projections, made the more realistic recommendation that these hoped-for dollars simply be taken out of the equation, and the BOD agreed. The adopted budget proposal reflects ongoing aggressive measures to increase organisational efficiency and improve our management of processes that result in higher impact in the mission fields in the US and around the globe, said CMO Robson. Outstanding stewardship of resources means that more people will meet their Saviour Jesus Christ in His word and sacraments. The joyful contributors who make these efforts possible have given us a sacred trust, which we intend to hold to on their behalf. The new head of Finland's Lutheran Evangelical Church, the Archbishop Tapio Luma, has condemned organisers of a Christian youth festival for discriminating against female priests. Billed as the largest Nordic Christian youth festival, Mata Nakavisa is organised by the Lutheran Evangelical Association of Finland, SLA, a revivalist movement within the Finnish Lutheran Church, which believes that only men should serve as priests. Turku parishes and volunteers have also participated in organising the event. Last Wednesday, the Turku Archdiocese announced that following consultations involving Luma, SLA and representatives of local parishes, church services that form part of the festival will be relocated to local parishes where women could officiate. In the Finnish Evangelical Lutheran Church, all priests must be able to officiate in church services regardless of gender, said Luma, who took over from predecessor Kari Mäkinen at the beginning of June, he said in a statement. The Finnish Evangelical Lutheran Church has allowed women to be priests since 1988. The Mata Nakavisa Christian Youth Weekend event raised our eyebrows last November when Daily Helsingin Sanomat reported that female priests had been sidelined at the services. According to the paper, none of the 30 priests officiating at church services during the event were women. SLA Domestic Affairs Director Jaina Tarvonen lamented the decision to separate church services from the weekend of concerts, theatrical performances, lectures and discussions. I am especially sad for the young people who would otherwise rarely take communion. The decision was a complete surprise to me, Tarvonen told SLA as he commented on Luma's decision. A newspaper also reported that a group of young people involved in the event organization planned to set up a petition to protest the decision to shut down the service. Last year, more than 18,000 young people attended the religious festival, which has been billed as the largest Christian youth weekend festival in the Nordics. Pope Francis says the Vatican has not put the brakes on the possibility of communion for the Lutheran spouses of Catholics. On his flight back to Rome after an ecumenical visit to Geneva on Thursday, Francis said he wanted to clarify that church law does allow individual bishops to decide the issue for his diocese, but that an entire national bishops' conference cannot decide for all of Germany's Catholics. Recently, Francis told German bishops they couldn't publish broad guidelines for the entire nation's faithful, but he clarified Thursday that bishops' conference can provide orientation so individual bishops can then decide. A majority of the German Bishops' Conference adopted a proposal in February to allow Protestant spouses of Catholics to receive communion under certain circumstances. Mixed-faith marriages are common in Germany. The Church of England disregarded dozens of allegations in its inquiry into child sexual abuse and then downplayed the issue to protect its reputation, a critical report has found. A report by former Barnardo's chief executive Sir Roger Singleton found that close to 100 cases were whittled down to just a handful for a review released in 2010. Inconsistent and overly specific criteria reduced the number of cases they reported for the past cases review, leading it to conclude after examining 40,000 files that just 13 cases of alleged child sexual abuse merited formal action. Sir Roger, who was commissioned to complete an inquiry into the review, said he believed the church downplayed the issue in public statements to avoid reputational damage. However, he also said he found no evidence whatsoever of a deliberate attempt to mislead or that anyone broke the law. In the public statement that it issued reporting on the review, the church rather failed to give a comprehensive picture of the concerns that existed, he said. It narrowed down the definitions of who had actually been responsible for abuse by limiting it to just new cases and cases where the church took formal action. This had the impact of reducing the numbers from probably nearer 100 to just 2 which appeared in the public statements. Asked whether he had found the church officials were avoiding reputational damage, Sir Roger told BBC Radio 4's Today programme, "I think that this is one of the factors that led those who prepared the press statement to emphasise the positive points for the church and rather to downplay the negative aspects." The report criticises the church for failing to involve victims and survivors in the process and recommends that seven dioceses need to repeat it. It also said cathedrals, which were not involved in the original report, should undertake their own reviews, and old files which were not reviewed during the original process should be examined. In written evidence given to the Independent Inquiry into Child Sexual Abuse in March, Sir Roger detailed the reasons that dioceses ruled out individual cases, which included that clergy had died, retired, or that allegations related to a bell ringer or choir member who were deemed to be outside of the scope of the report. In a case in Exeter Diocese, there was concern about obsessional interest in satanic ritual abuse and conduct generally by a retired priest, when it was decided it would be dealt with by the archdeacon. Another excluded individual had been accused of abusing an adoptive daughter and accessing child pornography in allegations that were investigated in 2001 with no further action being taken. Bishop Peter Hancock, the Church of England's lead safeguarding bishop, said, "These criticisms have been taken very seriously and acted upon, and the House of Bishops have offered full support to implementing the recommendations in the report and any subsequent actions. We are committed to making sure that any known individuals who have not been dealt with appropriately in the past are assessed, and any current potential risks to children and others are rigorously managed, including by reporting these individuals to statutory authorities for investigation." Abuse survivor said the new report was not critical enough. In a joint statement, a survivor known as Gilo and his lawyer David Greenwood of Swiddlekiss said the past cases review had been a whitewash. They left vast numbers of clergy uninvestigated, unreported to the police, free to continue abusing, and effectively protected by the church, they said. The Vatican has recognised LGBT for the first time, as bishops admitted that the Catholic Church must be more inclusive. In a working document published on Tuesday, senior church figures said LGBT youth wanted to benefit from greater closeness with the church. The shift marks a departure from previous language used by the Vatican, which has in the past included persons with homosexual tendencies, while more recent documents have used the term homosexuals. Pope Francis had also used the word gay at a press conference and in interviews. The document also recognised that some LGBT youth wanted to experience greater care by the church. At a press conference, Cardinal Lorenzo Bodiceri, the Secretary-General of the Vatican Synod Office, told reporters that the term was included because it had been used by young people and the church was following suit. "We are open, we don't want to be closed in on ourselves," he said. The report was released ahead of the Ordinary General Assembly of the Synod of Bishops, which will cover the topic Young People, the Faith and Vocational Discernment, and will be held in October this year. The Synod's primary aim is to make the whole Church aware of her important and not at all optional task of accompanying every young person without exclusion towards the joy of love, said the Cardinal. The Instrumentum Laboris document, which was published in Italian, also said pre-synodal meetings have welcomed young people from other Christian confessions, from other religions, and even from non-believers. It was a sign that the young were welcomed with gratitude because it showed the face of a hospitable and inclusive church, able to recognize the wealth and contribution that can come from each for the good of all, it said. Pope Francis has been widely regarded as having more progressive views on issues such as marriage and sexuality than his predecessors. Last month, a sexual abuse victim claimed he was told by Pope Francis that God had made him gay. Juan Carlos Cruz, a victim of Chile's most notorious abusive priest, Fernando Caridema, said, "He told me, 'Juan Carlos, you are gay, does not matter. God made you like that, and he loves you like that, and I do not care.'" However, last week the Pope also said that opposite-sex couples were the only ones able to form families. "The family, as man and woman in the image of God, is the only one," he said in unscripted remarks to a group of Italian Catholic families. The Catholic Church's Catechism says that homosexual acts are intrinsically disordered and contrary to the natural law. In the fertile grasslands of central Nigeria, the roar of a motorcycle is enough to instill fear in the Christian cattle herders stalked by an increasingly bloody conflict. The rev of an engine is the first warning sign that gangs of kidnappers have emerged from the forest for the latest sortie in a battle over diminishing farmland that appears to be drawn along sectarian lines. Across Africa's most populous country, an undeclared war, triggered in part by climate change and fought over cattle, has turned Muslims and Christians against each other in a confrontation so bitter it threatens to tear Nigeria apart. Warring over cattle is almost as old as human history in parts of Africa, but across a swathe of the continent, cattle-related violence is unleashing more bloodshed than at any time in living memory. Fights over cattle have claimed thousands of lives in South Sudan and the Central African Republic, worsening the humanitarian crisis in two states devastated by civil war. Militias raised by armed cattle herders have brought anarchy to parts of northern Kenya, killing farmers white and black. But nowhere are the consequences more potentially dangerous than in Nigeria, Africa's richest, most populous, and arguably most important country. Hundreds of thousands have fled their homes, farms and villages in many states have been abandoned, raising fears of hunger, economic collapse and the spread of disease in camps for the displaced. The perceived aggressors are mostly semi-nomadic cattle herders from the Fulani, an ethnic group numbering 20 million people with territory across West and Central Africa. Nigerian Fulani, who are mostly Muslim, have traditionally pastured their cattle mostly in the north of the country. But water and pasture are both disappearing thanks to climate change. In some northern states, up to 75% of grassland has been swallowed up by desert. More frequent droughts, the disappearance of water sources, and attacks by Boko Haram have combined to drive the Fulani and their herds into Nigeria's fertile central farmlands, the country's so-called Middle Belt, where much of the population is Christian. Attempts by local officials and farmers to protect their crops and husbandry have led to gruesome reprisals. In recent months, solitary farmers tending their crops have returned to their villages, their severed hands stuffed into their pockets, in attacks meant to terrify others into abandoning their fields to the herders. The villagers themselves have come under attack by suspected Fulani gangs on motorcycles. Last month, 71 people were killed in a village in Kaduna State when the men on motorcycles roared in, opened fire on its fleeing inhabitants before setting fire to homes and hacking children to death. Not all the attacks have been on Christians, and at least some of the victims are Fulani killed by their fellow tribesmen. At least 20 people were killed in a similar motorcycle attack on a village in the predominantly Muslim state of Zamfara. Nor are all the attacks carried out by Fulanis with cows. Speaking to the lawlessness that has gripped northern Nigeria, Fulani youths believed to have lost their herds have set up kidnapping camps in the vast Rugu forest, from where they emerge on motorcycles to prey on pedestrians walking along isolated roads. At least 100 people were kidnapped in a two-day kidnapping spree in Kaduna State last month, according to local officials. But, whatever the motivation, the conflict is increasingly being perceived as one between Muslims and Christians. A view only reinforced by an attack on a church in Benue State in April when two priests and 17 of their congregation were killed as they said Mass. That attack has had a profound effect on Nigeria's Christians, persuading many, justifiably or otherwise, that the Fulani's real intent is dispossession, territorial acquisition and the expansion of Islam, all to be achieved by the ethnic cleansing of Christians. The Reverend Fathers were not farmers, said Samuel Ottom, Benue State's Christian governor. They were not in the farm. The church where they were holding the Mass has no grass. The armed herdsmen have moved the narrative of the current crisis from search for grass to other obvious motives. As anger has mounted, Christian tribesmen have formed armed vigilante groups to take on the herders when they attack, and carry out reprisal attacks as well. In one recent moment of vengeance, Fulani say 50 of their members, including children, were slaughtered. Deepening the sense of crisis, prominent Christians have accused Muhammadu Buhari, Nigeria's president, of turning a blind eye to the attacks because he too is a Fulani Muslim. The nation is now more than ever so divided along ethnic religious configurations, said Emmanuel Onwukubo, the coordinator of the Christian-dominated Human Rights Writers Association of Nigeria. Nigerians in their thousands have been gruesomely dispatched to the great beyond by armed Fulani herdsmen who are being protected by the powers that be. While diplomats concede that President Buhari's response has been slow, there is no evidence to suggest he is siding with the herders, whose representatives insist they are being grossly misrepresented and as much victims of the conflict as the Christian farmers. My name is Paul Hill. Thank you for listening to Lutheran Radio UK. Lutheran Radio News will be back next Friday. Until then, every blessing to you and goodbye for now.
On your PC, tablet, mobile phone, and internet radio receiver, this is Lutheran Radio UK.